I remember years ago, my father telling me the story during the Second World War of a man who was a pacifist and would go every day to Hyde Park in the center of London and stand up on a little soapbox and make speeches against the war. After several warnings by police and a refusal to stop speaking, they finally arrested him. And they kept him in jail for the duration of the war, which was another few years. The day he got out, he went back to the soapbox at Hyde Park and said, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted. Now, it's only been 3 months, not 3 years. But as I was saying before I interrupted myself, I had the chance for a sabbatical after 15 years of being the rabbi here. I will just tell you, I actually have 6 months in my contract, so that means there's another 3 months coming sometime in the future. Just warning you.
No more.
No way.
Oh, yes. But during these 3 months, I had the opportunity not just to travel a little bit, which I did, but also to work, and I completed just a first draft of a book on King David. And part of what was so illuminating and interesting to me about doing that is that the truth is, you can go to synagogue for years and years, and most of our Bible, most of the Tanakh, you never read. If I ask most people what's in the book of Samuel or what's in the book of Kings, or when was the last time you opened Proverbs, most of us would say, you know what, I remember the Abraham stuff. And I hear Moses a lot, but except for some scattered stories, like the story of Samson, maybe, or David and Goliath, we're ignorant of most of our own Bible. And that's because we don't read it regularly in synagogue. And so its riches and its beauty are lost to us. Psalms we read in the prayer book, and you don't even know how many psalms you know. But if you come to synagogue regularly, you know a lot of them. But the rest of it, not so much. And one of the joys of studying a different part of the Tanakh, and those of you who've been in the Torah class, we've been studying the first book of Samuel, and next year we'll study the second, which is the story of David. The story of David is contained in the book of Samuel. It's a little confusing, but it is. You discover how much Jewish commentary and wisdom and insight is contained in the books that we often don't read. And even though we know that there is no more important figure in the Jewish tradition than David, because after all, David is the one who is the forerunner of the Mashiach, of the Messiah, still, a lot of his life is very opaque to us. It's very bleary. It's very not understood. And I just want to highlight one small aspect of it this morning, because it dovetails so beautifully with the Torah portion that we do read, with Baha'alotcha, where we read about Moses and Moses' life. David has a much better start than Moses, because he's born into a family in Israel at a time when, yes, there's war, but it's not like being in slavery in Egypt. He's not in fear of being taken or killed. There's no evil Pharaoh ruling the land. And through a series of events that I'm not going to go into right now, of course, he becomes king. But David's kingship is consistently marred. That is, it's scarred, it's darkened, it's made less beautiful, less wonderful, both by his own actions, because he does some stuff that's really not very good. And since I hear children in the audience, I don't want to tell you. But it involves spotting someone on a roof who's married to someone else. Go home and look up Bathsheba. And also, he has a great deal of trouble in his own house. One of David's sons kills the other. Echoes of Cain and Abel. One of David's sons violates one of David's daughters. Half brother, half sister, by the way. That makes it any. And then one of David's sons leads a rebellion against him. So he has a lot of tsuris, a lot of trouble, a lot of pain, a lot of anguish in his life. And as is true with almost all of us, a lot of the anguish in his life is anguish that he invited in through inattention, through appetite, through indifference, through foolishness, through wickedness, through cruelty, through short-sightedness, all the faults that all of us are subject to all the time in daily life. But when you are the leader of a nation, the stakes, as you know, are much higher. Because everything that you do that is wrong doesn't only affect you, it affects the nation. And everything that I just told you about David's life had implications in Israel. And so you see how very fraught and difficult and tenuous leadership can be. And how David is constantly trying to recover, to make amends, to do better. And one of the most remarkable things, I think, about his life is that after leading a very tumultuous life with lots of war and rebellion and so on, he manages somehow to die peacefully in his bed. Now we turn to Moses. Moses, too, as you know, leads a difficult life. Moses also faces, even in this morning's Parsha, what is effectively rebellion from his own family, his brother and his sister, who gossip about him, who feel aggrieved because they don't have the same position that Moses does, just as David's children felt aggrieved that they weren't kings in place of David. And Moses too faces rebellions, not from his children, although David, by the way, faced a rebellion also from someone who wasn't his child. He faced more than one rebellion. Moses faces rebellion from Korach. And Korach says the same thing, essentially, that his own kin say, which is, what makes you think you're so great, Moses? And we know that Moses does sin. And he does do things wrong. And he does strike the rock. And he does say, shall I get water from you, from this rock, instead of attributing it to God? And so even though they're very different characters in very different ways, David, the Torah that we don't know, and Moses, the Torah that we know, they dovetail into the same lessons. Which is the implication in your life of all the character traits that you have and all the things you do and you don't do. And so you ask yourself in the end, so how come they get to be David and Moses? If it's true that they do many of the same things that all of us do and they make the same mistakes and sometimes worse, so what quality is it, or what congeries of qualities, what combination of qualities is it that these people have that allow them to be so exceptional in our history and in human history? And I don't think that this is susceptible of one answer, but I've only got one sermon this morning. So I'm going to give you one answer that I think is an important one, though it is hardly the only factor. And that is, this morning in the Parsha, it's not just the day that Moses' own sister and brother are angry at him and rebel against him. It isn't just that. Remember also that Joshua comes in and says, Moses, these other people, Eldad and Medad, they're out there prophesying when you're supposed to be the prophet. They're not supposed to be the prophets. So his job is also being threatened at the same time that his family is rebelling. But Moses, instead of saying, stop those people from prophesying, that's my job, says, I wish all of God's people were prophets. Moses feels grateful for what he has and doesn't begrudge other people what they have. Moses' basic posture in the world is one of gratitude and blessedness. And the same is true of David. David, who, as you know, according to our tradition, is the author of the Psalms, which over and over and over again, and it exists also in David's words in the book of Samuel, thank God and bless God for everything that he's given him. And that essential attitude, despite the difficulties of my life, despite the problems, despite all of that, I feel grateful for what I have, is also the attitude that we should have all the time, but especially this weekend. It's, after all, Memorial Day. It's a day on which we remember people who gave their lives so that we could sit here in freedom. How grateful we should feel for the struggles of others that enabled us to be blessed and to be free. And that essential religious attitude of thankfulness, that's what you see ultimately in David, in Moses, in the prophets, in our tradition. What are the first words a Jew is supposed to say upon arising in the morning? Modeh ani lefanecha, I am grateful to you. Your first word is a word of gratitude. In the Torah we read, and the Torah we don't know yet. And I say yet because, God willing, we'll learn that too. What we are taught is that for every blessing we have, the debt that God wants in return is thankfulness, gratitude. And surely, as we know, all of us, each in our own way, is extravagantly blessed. So let me end by saying how blessed I feel. Not only that the congregation was kind enough to allow me time to study and to travel, but that I can come back to such a wonderful place, a warm community, a beautiful and sacred congregation, and say, thank you. Shabbat Shalom.